Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest joining us from India is Dee Delaney. She is author of the trilogy, The Truth is Within. The number one book, The Truth, My Journey to the Other Side, is an amazing true story of loss, love, survival, and healing. Following the sudden and unexpected death of three partners, all young men in their 40s, Dee decided to give it all up and move to a small fishing village in India, where she started to rebuild her life with her small son. But the brutal murder of a young British backpacker stopped her in her tracks and seemed that death had a way of following her around. In Dee's second book, The Truth is the Art of Being, she examines the art of living and dying through the teachings of the Tibetan Bardo and the pagan book of Living and Dying. Her journey of discovery takes her across India and eventually back to the UK, where she trains as a soul midwife and realizes that she has the unique gift of helping people dying and about to cross over. As Dee returned to India, the third part of the story is calling to be told. In Book 3, The Truth, Within the Heart of Love, Dee's quest for the truth takes her to the south of France in search of the goddess and on the trail of the Holy Grail, as she finally realizes who she is and the divine lineage that connects her to the story of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. For more information, you can visit her website, which is www.ddelaney.co.uk. And with that, I'd like to welcome Dee to the show. Good day, Dee.
Hello, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. And how about yourself?
Really good, thank you. It's lovely to hear that introduction. Thank you for that.
You're very welcome. Now, most people have, you know, very distinct chapters in their book of life, but it seems like you've got books upon books in your book of life.
I know, and you know what? Most of it was completely unplanned, and I had no idea, and still don't know what's coming, if I'm honest. It's been a complete journey of exploring myself through the most amazing stories that have been gifted to me by losing three partners, as you said in the introduction, at a young age, which was, you can imagine, completely traumatic. And then being sent to India to heal and to rebuild myself and start a new life with my son, only to be faced with more suffering when a young British backpacker was murdered. And that was kind of a real defining point for me, because it made me really stop again and just ask deep questions about why all this death was following me around. And that brought me on to the subject of my second book, which is How We Live and Die, and the wisdom and the journey into the death realms and the wisdom we learn from that. But it was all a learning on the job experience, if you like, which was really took me by surprise and hasn't been easy. And amongst it all, there has been this story of the union of the male and female, the masculine and feminine, this coming back to wholeness at the heart. And that brings me to the story of the Holy Grail and the divine couple, who we know as Jesus, and many people think it's Mary Magdalene, but she was just part of something that was a trinity of light with one other, which I reveal in my third book.
Wow. Well, I'd like to, you know, throughout this hour, kind of devote a little bit of attention to each of those books.
Absolutely.
So that we can kind of dive a little bit deeper. So let's start with the first one, the truth,
yeah.
My journey to the other side. Now, with most people, you know, many widows, you know, losing one partner is, you know, just very traumatic, but to lose two, then three, what was your thought, you know, what were your thoughts about the, you know, the passing of three? I mean, to me,
You know, and thank you for asking that question, because it's a really tough question, because I'm somebody who reflects on every experience that comes to me. And so it made me look at myself, and, you know, if I'm honest, in the early days, it made me say, what's wrong with me? I really felt like I was cursed, you know, oh my God, what is wrong with me? Why have I called in all of this suffering and pain into my life? And it took me years of unraveling that story to know that I had this gift of being able to pass people over. I'm what's called a psychopomp, or somebody who has the gift of passing souls over from this life to the next. And actually, a lot of the work I do, which I talk about, which led me to the second book, is that work, helping souls over. But in the initial aftermath of so much death, you're left feeling that, what's the purpose of your life? How do I even try to tackle this insufferable grief when it's all laying into each other? First, Martin killed himself. So his was a suicide. And he is the father to my daughter, Millie. And death alone is difficult to deal with when it's unexpected and when it's from a young person. But when it comes in suicide, you're dealing with one of life's greatest taboos, this right or not right, depending where you sit, to end a life, to take life. So, and I was born a practicing, grew up as an Irish Roman Catholic. So religion played a big part in my understanding of death and sin. And there was so much shame from my family about the fact that this beautiful man felt he couldn't be in this world anymore. So that in itself was, there were layers upon layers upon layers of grief. And then a year after that, in 2010, my husband, who I was married to, who is father to my son, he died suddenly of a heart attack climbing Ben Nevis, which is a mountain in England. And I get the knock on the door by a policeman, and I knew instantly he'd come to give me the news. I knew, but I wouldn't let him over the threshold of my door with the news that my heart couldn't bear. And I remember when there were two policemen who came into the house, and my son, who was just 1.5, nearly 2, was running up and down the hallway, and my daughter was coming down. And I remember kind of going into stunned silence and almost acceptance and going into a mode of trying to deal with everything. And then I let out this piercing, guttural, animalistic scream that I've only ever heard before. And I heard that when my daughter was given the news that her father died. And that was a defining moment that united mother and daughter in grief. And she looked at me and she said, "Mummy, now you know what it's like to lose something so precious." And for me, it did, because when Martin, her father, died, that suffering was my daughter's, because we had parted long before he died. But when my husband died, that suffering was mine. And then the third partner that I dwell, he died in 2014. He was somebody that I dated between my daughter's father and my son's father. And we were no longer friends. And he died again young. And that was just another, my gosh. It let me into a space where I knew that life, nothing was permanent, that every moment in the click of a finger, life can change. We never know what's around the corner. But there was something in that. And with him, I had a third child, but I didn't bring that child into the world. So that child is a child in spirit. But there was something about, almost like my blood being connected with these men, that made me feel that I was somehow very tainted. So I took their deaths quite personally on a soul level. And I had a lot of unraveling to do, because I was dealing with a suicide, with a sudden death, and with a termination, and with a death related to alcohol. So it all felt quite grubby and difficult. And you know, I eventually decided that I needed to make some big changes in my life to deal with what was coming to me. And so I came to India in 2015 at Christmas. And India was a country that I adored. I had traveled to Mother India when I was 21 and spent a year. And I felt my heart was in India. And so when I visited with my two children for a holiday, Mother India, the sand of India, kind of called me in, and I felt a real peace. And when I left after our really amazing holiday, I fell to the floor of Mumbai Airport, and my friend who traveled with me pulled me up and I said, "I have to live in India. I have no idea what's calling me. I just know I need to come to India to heal, to write my books and to find love." But the love I was searching for was the love for me.
Yeah. Wow. First of all, with the triple death, I mean, it would only seem natural that you would wonder about, what was it in me that this happened. And one of the things I noticed is that the way that you described the suffering that occurred, that the suffering didn't happen to you, but it happened for you. So can you talk a little bit about that? Because there are people out there who now feel that suffering aspect of life, but I think you can maybe help them give a deeper meaning of it.
So suffering is a big word, isn't it? And we've lived in this paradigm up to this point now, where we have lived a story where we believe that to evolve, we have to go through suffering. We have pain. And when we go through pain and we go through suffering, we learn the art of compassion and forgiveness for ourselves. Now, compassion comes from the Latin, com means shared, and passion means suffering. So it's shared suffering. So when someone like me, my name is actually Dolores, and the Via Dolorosa is the way of grief, and it is the path that Jesus walked to the crucifixion. It's The path in Jerusalem, the actual road he walked, has been called the Via Dolorosa, the way of suffering, the way of grief. So from the essence of my name, there was this almost like prophecy for me that my life up to this point now was a life of suffering, that I, my soul, came to this world to learn about the richness of life and the beauty of life and the lessons we learn that bring us into our heart, that give us this gift of forgiveness for ourselves and compassion for ourselves, always and only for ourselves first, so that we could share for others. This was the story that was weaving through my blood, and that has been weaving through my blood throughout these whole three books. But something deep inside me struggles with this notion. Something very childlike in me says, but why do we have to suffer? Why? I'm a good person. I'm kind. I'm generous. I'm loving. Why do we have to suffer to evolve? And this is where I was at the end of that journey, at the end of book one, questioning that. I know I would not be in India today if my husband hadn't died. This I know deeply in my heart. I know that all the gifts that have come to me through being brave enough to leave my Western dream life and the job and the trappings of the West to come and live in India would not have come to me if my husband was still alive. I know this. So within these gifts and my life on a spiritual level, on a inner planes, things that really matter, which is our inside world, are so infinitely richer because his death brought me to where I am now. Talking to you. which is a real gift. Thank you. And sharing my story with the world.
My pleasure. And the one thing that you said earlier was that, it wasn't easy. And then what you just said too is that, you really took many leaps of faith when it came to being guided to where you are now. So what would you say, to people who maybe have a sign or have an urge or a guidance to make a dramatic change like you've made several, but maybe are just a little bit fearful of the unknown?
Yeah, the first thing I would say is to really sit in the silence to hear the sound of your soul. Stop. there is infinite wisdom in silence. There is infinite lessons that our hearts are waiting to teach us if we can just switch off the thinking mind that keeps us locked in stories and fear of what ifs or should haves or could haves and projection, because none of us know truthfully what's around the corner. So we give all this energy of, oh my God, and I did when I first planned to come to India. My family thought I'd finally gone mad and I was leaving a really charmed existence. I had wonderful friends. I had a wonderful life. I had everything, and I kind of went, no, don't want that. I'm going the other way. And it wasn't an easy choice. But I had to walk that path to come out of a comfort zone, if you like, because I was stuck in this story of entrapment and I couldn't do this because I fed myself lots of lines, and a lot of it, if I'm honest, was fear of doing stuff alone. I was in a really good team with my husband. And suddenly, you know, I felt I had the little girl's dream of the knight in shining armor. And it felt so cruel, because my path to him wasn't easy. And then finally I meet him, and then he's taken from me. And that felt deeply treacherous, I have to say. And it was like a starting again. And it felt uncomfortable, and it was uncomfortable. And I came to India, and I looked around me, and I said, what the hell are you doing? And I started panicking and going into overdrive mode. But what I made myself do was sit in the icky ugliness of it. And I stopped fighting, and I let the tears flow. And I knew that beneath the tears was great love.
Well, you know, that's the, you know, the idea, you know, of sitting in silence and kind of listening to what you hear. I mean, that's, you know, in today's society, that's one thing that I think people have moved away from, you know, that, you know, in today's world, it's such a noisy world, you know, and that there is just distractions everywhere that easily be, you know, diverted from that silence. And, you know, in the trilogy talks about the truth, you know, being within. And that's one thing that I think if people, you know, take the time to listen, that they're going to, you know, get that message. And, you know, it is some, you know, I, for one, was one of those who would seek, you know, guidance, and, you know, that I wasn't a very good listener. You know, as a matter of fact, I had one intuitive person tell me one time that my guides were saying that they were talking to me, but I wasn't listening. So, you know, that was one of the things that I really had to learn to do, because it's not something that we normally are trained to do.
Yeah, well, it is something that is innate in our being, but we've forgotten it. So, you know, I think we live in a society, in a world that's a world of doing. And we've moved away from the simplicity of life. But our lives, up to maybe the last couple of thousand years, even more recent, were simple lives. You know, we didn't have all these technological advancements and distractions and things pulling from ourselves. You know, this is a recent part of our life. And I think it's shown us that the more stuff we have, the less connected we are. The simplest way to be connected is to go out in nature, barefoot in the sand or in the grass, sit on your own, close your eyes, tune into the breath, and be. And when we get into a habit of doing that, and we start, you know, I talk about it in my first book, you start with 5 minutes. And then you do a little bit more and a little bit more. And then it becomes your natural habit. You know, I wake up to meditating for 45 minutes so that stream of unconscious thought is released. And then I go to bed in the same way. So for an hour and a half every day, that's my ritual. Because that feeds my soul. You know, and when we feed our soul, we come into who we are at the heart center, and we allow the heart to guide us. We switch off the thinking mind, and we go into the feeling heart. And that's where we are open then to the true wisdoms of the universe. And life becomes very simple then. Things still happen. I mean, I used to be a head of planning at the BBC. I mean, a planner. I used to plan and plan and plan. Now, I wake up, I do my rituals because I know they feed my essence. And then life comes to me. I'm not chasing her. The books wrote themselves. the experiences that came to me through, I talk about in my second book, The Truth is the Art of Being, through moving into this new paradigm of being and not doing. The books just wrote themselves. People showed up in my life. The stories appeared. I didn't have to go chasing for it. It happened. And this is the beauty of the divine coming into our lives. It's infinitely better than what you or I in our earthly minds could ever dream up. Infinitely.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the things, you know, the idea of that connection with nature, for me, that's a big one. I'm a kind of a nature photographer, and I spend every morning doing my little with nature.
Beautiful.
But the funny thing was is that I wrote one book called Joy Potential, and the idea for it came to me on one walk, and then so I went back immediately to my office afterwards, and you know, kind of jotted down all the things that came to me, and then each day, I mean, and I didn't do it like a typical author, laying out an outline and filling in the details.
Yeah.
But each day I walked and I got some information. So, and on days where it was either too cold or too rainy, I couldn't walk. You know, I sat down to try and write, and nothing came to me. So, anyway, in a funny way, it was, I think my guidance, you know, kind of, first of all, letting me know that, you know, I needed to have that connection. I needed to do the walk, you know, and connect. And that also that if I needed to exercise, they were going to make sure I did it.
Do you know, it's exactly how I do it, Robert. So I wake up, I found I have a magic hour. So I wake up at 5 a.m. where the veils between this world and spirit are fine. So that's when I tune in and I write and I tap away. And this stream of unconscious thought, which writes my books, happens. But then I take my son to school and I walk the beach. And with every footstep in the sand, this voice speaks to me and tells me what to do. So as you say, nature. And it's the most magical experience, as you know, when suddenly you're connected through the sand or the trees or the grass or the ocean or the birds or the plants, whatever it is, because there is wisdom all around us. And the more we evolve and become awakened to this, the earth, the ascended masters who are there for us all the wisdom is encoded in our Mother Earth. It's a living, breathing, evolving being just like we are. And she shares. She's here to share with us. She's here to give us. She's here to feed us with the food, to nourish us, to excite us. That's what happens when nature and we become one. It's all the same thing. It's all the same stream of consciousness.
Yeah, very, very much. And you know, the one thing that I learned through that whole process was, you know, the importance of that connection. You know, that the fact that on days when it didn't work for me, I mean, those were days that I allowed external circumstances, be it cold or rain or whatever, to impact that connection, that I allowed that to prevent me from connecting. And so, you know, I mean, but each day was exciting because I wanted to know what happened. You know, what happens next?
Yeah, it is. And then when you're walking and you don't have a recorder and you think, am I going to remember that when I get back? You know,
exactly.
But you do, don't you?
Very much.
You remember.
I agree. So we're about halfway through the show, Dee, but I do want to take a quick break. And then when we come back, I have an individual in the chat room who has a question. And, you know, it has to be, well, the question is about forgiveness and how to forgive a person who you know personally murdered a sibling. So, you know, so regarding forgiveness and how to deal with that suffering, we can maybe address that right after the break, okay?
Perfect.
Great. Okay. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My very special guest joining us today from India is Dee Delaney, and she is author of the trilogy, The Truth, My Journey to the Other Side, The Truth is the Art of Being, and The Truth Within the Heart of Love. And again, you can find out more about Dee by visiting her website, which is www.deedelaney.co.uk. And okay, so with that, we're back. Dee?
Hello, thank you. It's good to be back.
Thank you. Okay, so regarding Marie in the chat room who has this challenge of forgiveness regarding someone who murdered a sibling. So what were your comments or guidance to Marie be?
It's such a difficult one when it comes to murder or rape or violence towards anybody. We need to stop and think, how could one person do that to another? I mean, it's brutal. And the only way one person can do that to another is if it's happened before. And we are souls on a journey who have lived many, many, many lives. And we come to learn many lessons. And for me personally, I learned the lessons through experience in this life and in others. So if murder, rape, violence has come into my life, and it has, I then have to look deep within myself and say, how can that be? And it's often because in a past life that on someone else. But of course, we don't remember consciously our past lives. So it's easy to point the finger and say, you know, you're this and you're that. But somewhere along the line, we have to stop and have compassion for this brutality, the energy, because that energy feeds more of the same thing. In my own experience here of India, what happened was a tragic event to a young woman, absolutely brutal, but I know the circumstances of one of the perpetrators who was brutalized himself. He was a bit of a rotten egg, and his family treated him pretty horribly. And one might say, yes, just deserves, but that anger has to go somewhere. The brutality that was delivered to him, the energy exists forever and a day, and it has to go somewhere. And unless we dig deep in our hearts and find forgiveness for these actions, more of the same will come in to our world. So we have to kill it with love and forgiveness. We cannot do it any other way.
Yeah. You know, the one thing that I've learned through the years of doing the show and talking about forgiveness is number one, that forgiveness does not mean an acceptance necessarily of what happened. So I mean that is not. And then also that forgiveness is really for the individual, the forgiver, you know, because without that forgiveness, that anger and hate or discomfort, all of that will remain and will affect your daily life and manifest in many different ways.
Yeah, it will sit within your heart, you know, and you're right, you know, we can observe and we can feel the pain, of course we can. We can feel the sadness. When the young girl was murdered here, I felt her suffering. I felt it. It was raw. Our whole community felt it. And we can feel it. We can honor it. We can observe it. We can condone it. But if we shed more anger to it, it will just get bigger. And it's like pouring oil on a flame. And it rots us from the inside. But when we know the forgiveness that we are searching for is already there inside our hearts, often forgiveness is about, and this is a really important point for Marie, your friend, your listener. We often talk about forgiveness for being about others. And as you rightly so, the forgiveness we are seeking is always for ourselves. First and foremost, because if I have so much hatred towards somebody for what they've done, that hatred just eats me.
Yeah. And, you know, and one of her points too is about, you know, the murderer being free.
Yeah.
He's never free. I mean, he may be out and walking around now in this particular life, but that act is bound to his soul. So
absolutely, and bound by the acts of karma until he learns in this life or the next to forgive what he did, to forgive himself for what he did. He's never going to be free because he'll take that soul wound onto the next life and the next and the next. That's why, you know, these patterns that we have in our lives keep coming through the lineage, the family lineage, you know, it's because unless somebody within that family line breaks the pattern and the conditioning, be it anger or violence, which creates murder or hatred or jealousy or whatever, abandonment issues, whatever these wounds are, unless somebody stands up and heals that wound, it will pass on to the next generation. And the way we heal the wounds of our souls is to shine forgiveness on the situation and love. It's the only way.
Yeah. You know, this discussion reminds me, my partner is a clairvoyant, and he had a client probably about 15 years ago now who came to him for readings, and she was a woman with a delightful heart and disposition, but she also had really debilitating arthritis. I mean, that to the point of, you know, her hands were just gnarled. And, I mean, it was just one of those things that it was just really difficult to see. Well, during one of the readings, it came through that she and her current boyfriend had been together in many lifetimes, and in the previous lifetimes that he had killed her. I mean, it was it was one of those things where, I mean, you know, he's one of those that he sees it, he tells it, you know, and, and she actually felt that some truth in that, and then probably about 6 months later, we got news that just from the television that he had taken her out to the desert and killed her again.
No.
And she had just finished painting, and painting was hard for her, an image of Kuan Yin. And
forgiveness.
I know, exactly. And, you know, and he was just heartbroken about it happening, saying that, you know, what could he have done differently to prevent that? And I said, you know, you told her, and she knew, and she felt that it was the case, you know, but she had free will choice. And this was one of those things that she chose to stay. And this is their karmic entanglement, you know. And it really,
do you know, that's just given me shivers, you know, because she chose to come to life for that suffering. And that is, you know, and for your dear partner, I can imagine he suffered too. But we are bound by the rule of non-intervention, aren't we? We have no right to tell others what to do. And that's, you know, when you're an empath or you work in the healing field, it's a really hard lesson to learn. It's a really hard lesson to learn. But you know what? You know, and I've struggled with that with my husband when he died. You know, what if I did, and what if this, and what if that? And we can't live in that space of thinking we can change others' lives, because free will prevails and everybody has to live the path that's right for them. And that's what non-attachment is really all about. It's about not being attached to others, observing their way and seeing it, not trying to change them, allowing them to be. And that's also a great gift that we learn through this art of forgiveness. So I hope your partner knows that he did the best he could, and actually her path was always to be where she is now.
Yeah. You know, it took a little while, you know, for that. But, you know, that was, I mean, the first time that he said that to me, it's like, well, you know, you did tell her, you know, and she was aware and felt that truth in that, awareness. And and yet, you know, that and the fact that it had happened multiple lifetimes shows that it is a kind of a deep pattern, you know. And that
there's a deep suffering of the feminine there, this you know, allowing, you know, this story of abuse, murder, you know, this is a deep soul wounds that, please God, she comes in, or as a male or a female, that energy comes into the next life knowing that there is actually no need to suffer. We don't need to go through suffering to evolve. And this is kind of takes me on to my third book, if you don't mind me talking just onto that for a minute, The Truth Within the Heart of Love, because this was a book born out of this desire to integrate the masculine and feminine aspects of myself. And it really is the story of the goddess and the patriarchy. This energy of the patriarchy, it's important to know, is an energy of divide and control. It's a masculine energy that sits in all of us, men and women, and it's an inner, it's the patriarchy within ourselves that is calling to be healed, not outside. And this is the subject of the third book. And many women, many beautiful, strong, amazing women have called in relationships where the patriarchy and the masculine aspect has been one of violence or dividing or control or aggression. But it's coming to us at this time to be healed, because unless we do honor the masculine within us all and let go of the story that we need to suffer to evolve, we're going to continue with this story of control and suffering. And
I'm sorry, I was going to say that, you know, it seems, you know, that masculine, feminine, I won't say duality, but the essence of the masculine and feminine is really being played out on the global stage right now in front of everyone who, I mean, it seems that it's, that the dramatic events that we see globally are a way to shake up within each of us that idea of the two existing, and you know that they're equally as important and each have gifts.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is an awakening and therefore a shaking, you know, and there is a degree of discomfort that we're going through, which is shining a spotlight on all the behaviors that we no longer find acceptable: aggression, control, pitching one man against the other. This is not a recipe for a happy world. I mean, it sounds so simple, doesn't it? When we say it, that is not a recipe for a happy, peaceful life. And the last 2,500, maybe up to 7,000 years of patriarchal control has demonstrated that clearly. We don't need any more evidence to tell us that this system of patriarchy, which pits one man against another and tells us we're divided, just doesn't work. So we're all awaking to that. And it's not about man against woman, black against white. It's not about anything other than seeing ourselves as separate from each other. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't call for peace.
Yeah, you know, and the idea of dominance of one over the other, I mean, it's really about equality in the sense of, you know, those two archetypes of, you know, including, you know, the qualities, you know, and having balance, you know. And right now, you know, balance has been really out of whack for thousands of years.
Yeah, it's, you know, and what happens with balance is, you know, the hermetic laws of polarity. You swing one way, you've got to go back the other. You know, we all know that. And balance is the middle way. It's the way, it's the path that most, you know, spiritual practices say. You know, too much, you know, navel gazing, being a fairy, doesn't get you anywhere either, you know. And, you know, and too much being the antithesis of that and being in the shadow gets you nowhere. But when we bring yin and yang, masculine, feminine, light and shade together within the heart, which is the center of the chakra system in our bodies, our earthly bodies, in our auric fields, then we come into balance. And this is the teachings, the ancient teachings that come all the way back through the Lemurians and the Egyptians and the Greeks. It's this, the way to peace on earth is a pathway into the heart where all aspects of our being are integrated. And then we have many, many aspects of our being. It's I talk in book three about this notion of 12 around one. You know, we have 12 higher selves. We actually have 12 chakras. So we have 7 in the body, main chakras. And then we have another 5 that are outside the body that link us to the cosmos, our higher selves and beyond. When we pull, you know, and align and integrate all aspects of our being, which means some of them we're not going to particularly identify with and like, you know, but we need to, this is where forgiveness comes in, because there are some parts of my being that I've kind of witnessed over the past few years, and I'm a bit like, not quite fond of her. Let's put her in the cupboard. But when we put things in the cupboard, they come out, or they project onto others, and we call in these aspects of ourselves that we don't necessarily want to see in ourselves, but we see in others. So we call in things like jealousy if it's within us. We call in anger. We call in aggression. We call in selfishness. Whatever it is that we need to learn to integrate all aspects of our being so that we truly see ourselves, we will call it in to love and to heal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. We're down to about 10 minutes here. And we talked about, you know, a lot of what's in book one and book three, but book two, let's kind of take the minutes we have remaining to talk about that.
Yeah.
That one is called The Truth is the Art of Being. And in that one, you examine the art of living and dying. So would you mind sharing with the listeners, a little bit about that, you know, kind of what are the main messages that readers will get from reading that particular book?
Yeah, so book two is slightly more, I suppose, there's a lot of information about the actual art of dying. So we are elemental beings. Our bodies are made up of the elements earth, wind, fire, water, air. And we die. When we die, the earth leaves our body first, and then the water, and then the fire, and then the air. We take our last breaths. And this wisdom has been with us for thousands of years through the Tibetan system called the Bardo. And it comes from a book called the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And this wisdom has come from the East. And I was writing about death because it's been such a prominent part of my life. So I went on a quest all over India to find out and learn from the Tibetan monks up in the northern Indian in the Himalayas about the Bardo. That was one aspect, if you like, the Eastern aspect, almost like the logical mind aspect, because it's a science about how we die. And I've tried to make the wisdoms of the Bardo, which are incredibly complex, into a digested version of the different realms and the different experiences that the body goes through and the mind, body, spirit goes through when it dies. But then the pagan book of living and dying came to me when I trained to be called a soul midwife. And a soul midwife is a friend to the dying. And I went back to the UK and I trained to learn about the gift of dying from a Western perspective, which, if you like, is the pagan view. And the pagan way of looking at dying is more of a freer, emotional look at how you work with the soul and transition the soul into the next life. And both of the wisdoms overlap and they share very, very similar experiences. But the pagan one was more a feeling heart way of death, you know, whereas the Tibetan way was more of a logical mind. And I kind of took that as this is the masculine and feminine coming together. And what both wisdoms teach us is that We are souls transitioning through life and death and constantly spiraling, constantly evolving. Death is not an end, it's the beginning of another life. And that life that comes in through the mother father essence that unites in the heart. And then the way we come into the world through the womb of the mother. The way we leave the world, we birth ourselves, which is out of the world. It's the only time we come in through the womb of the mother, but we leave on our own, which is why soul midwives are there to assist the dying through that transition, because there's often a lot of fear about death, especially in the West. We think that death is the end, so we become very frightened. And it's a time when we reflect on our lives, and if, you know, we've done things that we're not proud of, we often hold on to such fear because we feel we're going to be punished for the lives we've had. But we're not punished. We are brought into the next life to review the life we've had, but we're not punished. There is no punishment in death. There's only new life and love and kindness. And we need to release this fear, because the fear keeps us trapped and projects more fear into the new life. So that's really the two wisdoms that come together. And I guide readers through what it really means to pass on, and that there's nothing to fear. And actually, death itself is all in the mind. And if we come to death in the way we approach life, which is through kindness and love and curiosity, then we will exit the world with kindness and love and curiosity. It doesn't have to be scary.
Yeah, you know, my mother lived life in a very fearful and worried way. And when it came time for her to transition, that was utmost on her mind. You know, the fear, and the fear of punishment. You know, she was raised in the Roman Catholic, you know, tradition.
Yeah.
And, you know, that all of her mistakes were going to lead her right to hell. You know, and it was, and it, to me, it was just sad, because I, you know, recognized that, you know, if that was the energy that she was going to carry with her to the next stage, that would be, it'd be kind of like a, you know, being born angry, you know, and that just made me sad, you know, to think that that was the case, and that there was really no need for that, you know, and just needing the ability to step outside, you know, what she was taught, and you know, re-examining those beliefs.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and that, unfortunately, for many of us who are raised within the Abrahamic religions of a punishing higher God, is kind of the legacy we carry with us in death, unless we look beyond these misconceptions of what life is, because that's not what life is, and that's not what transition is. And God isn't punishing. God is love, and love doesn't punish you. We have to stop this association with pain and love. You know, love is not painful. Light is not suffering. Life is not suffering. When we move to this new paradigm, this earth of peace, the route to peace is to let go of these stories of pain and suffering and sin, because in truth there is no sin.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Dee, this has really been a delightful chat, and I really want to thank you for taking the time to speak with me and the listeners today.
Oh, no, and Robert, thank you so much for inviting me on your show and sharing this space with me. It's beautiful to talk to you and your listeners, so thank you.
You're very welcome. And now, I did notice on your webpage under the Stay Connected tab that people can follow you in different media, social media platforms. I've already liked your Facebook page, following
you
on Instagram now and Twitter.
So
I really look forward to keeping in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. So my website is deedelaney.co.uk. And all my links for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram are on there. But if you do sign up, my first book, I had an original soundtrack to it because music brought my story to life. And if you sign up, you can listen to the musical soundtrack to my first book, which is quite a nice thing to do because music is magic, hey?
Exactly. Again, thank you for your time, and I look forward to keeping in touch.
Bless you, Robert. Thank you so much, and I likewise look forward to hearing more of your wonderful shows. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Again, everyone, today my very special guest joining us from India has been Dee Delaney, and as she mentioned, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is deedelaney.co.uk, and that's deedelaney.co.uk. And again, we've been talking about her The Truth Is Within trilogy. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.